Podcasting with Kerry Jones.
You wait for the head to sink down and you see the back come out and the dorsal, and then you know, you hope and pray and you tighten and you hope everything sort of locks up solid, and it did, and this thing head off. Five times it had me down to the backing.
Wow.
Five times and two changes of underpants later I landed it.
Well, thanks for joining me, Paul. It's been a while since we chatted last.
Thank you for the invite. It is a wee while since we actually spoke, but yeah, it's really nice to hear you.
I think we had the podcast, I think it was about 3 years ago, but we last chatted when you did a really fantastic piece for the journal, and I was working for the journal. That was about 12 months ago.
Yeah, that was. I enjoyed doing that as well. I think I wrote about March Browns, I believe. Yeah?
That's right, yeah. Well, I was hoping to chat with you earlier on in the week, but I know you were very much like me. If the fishing's good, you want to be in the river instead of talking about it. And you have had 2 days on the river. What's it been like?
Yeah, firstly, apologies for that, Kerry. I know you were trying to pin me down, and I can be a bit of a bugger to pin down, especially when fishing's involved. But you talk the same language anyway, so you know how it is. And thanks for your patience with that. Yeah, when you spoke the other day, our rivers have, believe it or not, given the heat wave in the south, we're experiencing bands of rain here in the northwest. And consequently, over the weekend, our rivers came up quite a lot. Actually, some of them sort of 2 to 3 feet higher than normal summer level, and they were just dropping in nicely on when you called the other day and I went to the river. And surprisingly, at this time of year, if we've got settled weather, which we haven't here, you would expect evening fishing and blue-winged olives and caddis fly.
Right.
However, this unsettled weather sort of thrown everything out of kilter. And the first day I fished, the first day the river was fishable, if you like, or one of the rivers, it was very good sort of terrestrial action, catching on beetles and little blowflies. There was a few different beetles. We've got a beetle here called rove beetles, which are not dissimilar to devil's coachman, if you like, long, slender beetle. There was some soldier beetles about. There was various other little beetles. There was houseflies being blown on, and a couple of sort of unidentified black terrestrials, possibly some sawflies about. I just used my obvious little apt, I call it, which is a all-purpose terrestrial, and principally just a little black dry fly that covers several possibilities or situations that include, if you tie in like an 18 or a 20, it covers ants. In a 16, it's black gnats or fever flies. In a 14, you're looking at house flies, and certainly in a 12, you're looking at house flies or blow flies. It'll cover beetles as well. So I had a great day, absolutely unexpected. I went out the following day, and the conditions had totally changed yesterday when you called me. We had 100% cloud. For the time of year, it was miserable. And obviously, there was no terrestrials about. The fish kept, or the hatcher kept me waiting. It must have been 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon when there was a splutter of blue-winged olives. And thankfully, a few fish decided to look up. But that didn't last because the rain came heavy around about 7 o'clock. And this morning when I checked the river levels, there's been a wee spike in the rivers. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they'll drop back. But you know what it's like these days. You'll be the same. A lot of the listeners will be the same. You're continually checking weather patterns, yeah. River levels. You know, my toolbar, usually somebody's toolbar is made up of exciting things on the laptop, you know. Dare I even mention porn? I don't know if you're allowed to say that. You might edit that out. No, I'm joking.
I'm not going to edit it out. It's staying in.
But certainly more exciting things than weather stations. My toolbars, weather stations, and river levels, you know, and that's it kind of thing. And it's kind of habitual or a religion in the season. As soon as you go up, you check the weather, you check the river levels. Even on the days you might not be fishing, it's just ingrained in you. And that's what we do, as you know. And I'm sure, like I said, listeners will be, some of them will be, or most of them will be nodding and going, yeah, I know what he's talking about there.
Yeah. I look at pictures of roach, because for me, when I'm fishing with Ferox, I love the look of a nice roach. And sometimes I'm looking at it and it's like fish porn for me.
You need to get out more, Kerry. That's all I can say.
I'm doing my best. But when you're on these local rivers of yours, I guess you know a lot of fish individually. Do you actually catch the same fish twice?
Hey, that's quite interesting. Okay. God, I've got so many sort of stories that sort of contradicts itself here. We're under the impression, or certainly I was in my formative years, that a trout was faithful to a given life. It lived in a certain area and fed in a certain area. What I've noticed, obviously, I've sort of positioned myself where I live just now, Kerry. I've got one of my local rivers within 3 miles of my doorstep, and the other's sort of 5 miles away. Yeah. If you cast the net a wee bit wider, say to 20 minutes drive, we can look at 1, 2, 3, 4, possibly 5 different rivers that I can be on.
Yeah.
So they lend themselves to just dropping in, observation, things like that. Now, what I have noticed is there are certain lies and various fish will occupy them lies. For example, I was out with a good friend of mine, Richard Tong, actually. We were fishing a river and we named a particular lie Old Trusty, not because a certain fish lived there, but it could be trusted that when you arrived there, a fish would be rising. Nice. And we were there one time. I caught a fish out of it. Several times through that season, we revisited that area and caught different fish. The following year, Richard caught one of the same fish I'd caught. As you know, every trout's got individual markings, like every human being's got individual fingerprints. So you can identify fish from the markings, and especially on the gill covers, that's a class place to look.
Yeah.
And that was one instance. Again, we were on a different river one time, and the day before Richard had been out, and we were walking up the river. We were actually walking past a part of the river we'd fished the day before. I personally don't like fishing the same section of river in two consecutive days. But first of all, it rests the fish. Secondly, you kind of know the script. I like to be on sort of fresh snow, if you like.
Yeah.
And on this occasion, Richard had fished a part of the river. He'd caught a fish in this light. This one's quite funny, and it's to his expense. It was a fish of about 2 pund or so. Yeah. Following day, we were just walking up past this part, and I clocked this rise in this place, and he said, oh, I had a fish out of there yesterday. And I sort of said, well, I didn't, so I'm going to have a cast. And I hooked this fish, and it was over 4 pound. So, wow. I mean, it's not the size that matters. I mean, good for me. However, it indicates that there are certain lies or feeding lies that fish prefer and individual fish will use. Another example, I was on one of my local rivers. This happened this season, but last season it stands out really well. I was on a particular fish, and there was definitely only one fish there. And I know that, Kerry, because early this season, which hopefully we'll talk about as well, this dry weather we had, consequently, our rivers dropped really low and clear, and you could sight fish by polarizing them like you do in New Zealand, for example. So I could see this fish, could physically see it. Not only that, it was rising.
Right.
Anyway, I caught the fish, and as I always do when I hook fish, I give them side strain and try and steer them downstream as not to spook any fish that are unseen or might be close by upstream. Steered this fish away, and it was on a pool tail, and it was a nice size fish. It run into the neck water in the pool below and downstream. So I had to follow it downstream, landed it, came back up to release the fish into the same pool. Just as I released it, I looked up and another fish rose in exactly the same place. Another fish had already moved into that vacated lie.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's incredible. And I actually had that happen this year on a different river in a different set of circumstances. So it just goes to show, you know, certainly I feel there are lies that fish use and prefer, and they're a communal lie, if you like, I call them. Yeah. Various fish use them at various times. So, and a lot depends on food availability, hatch density, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I guess the fish would move from the lie. Like, for instance, you said your friend had one 2 pound and you had one 4. Maybe your 4 pound of the day before moved on to somewhere else, but then came back and pushed that one out.
Absolutely. That's a very sort of plausible situation. Yeah, I'm sure that could have happened.
So are you going to be out tonight?
That's the plan, Kerry. I'm just watching the weather now, and overhead conditions are good. The breeze is a bit of an issue. But certainly for blue-winged olive, I like the breeze to drop. So we'll just see what happens. Just fingers crossed, watching the... I have a gauging tree, as I call it, out in the back garden, where it's quite a tall tree on a little bit of a mound, not in my garden, sort of out in the paddock. And I can tell by how much it bends or blows or teeters at the top how windy it will be. So I'm looking at it right now as we talk. And it's fluttering about a little bit too much for my liking at the moment. But as you know, the wind can drop in the evening. It can be totally different.
Almost always does, doesn't it? I know you do an awful lot of pleasure fishing. Have you done any trips at all this year?
I was in Spain earlier this year filming with Guideline, who I'm involved with now, help them develop tackle. So we were in Spain doing a wee bit of filming. The weather was against us. We had thunderstorms. Somehow we managed to piece it together, but it was a difficult trip. Later this year, maybe going to Bosnia, I don't know. I've been doing Bosnia for quite a few years, and I do like doing trips with people. It's so much fun, and they're a great experience. Used to go to New Zealand a lot, but COVID kind of knocked that on the head. Was out there when COVID sort of started. And then was in Chile.
But wow.
Believe it or not, Kerry, got the last flight out of Chile before the president there closed all the borders. Part of me wishes I hadn't got the last flight out, actually. would have been nice to be stranded over there in fish heaven. But yeah, New Zealand's changed a little bit, and it's sort of still on my periphery or in the back of my mind. But sadly, it's not the forefront of the mind at the moment. But yeah, I do trips. I take little groups. I wouldn't call it a hosted trip per se, but a bunch of friends and I get together and we do trips, and quite happy to do trips with people. And it's good fun.
I noticed a lot of people are doing the South America trips for sea trout now.
You're from sea trout sort of country anyways, aren't you? I actually fished down there a few times many, many years ago, and this was for sea trout, or supposedly, because here's what happened, Kerry. So we get to, I was fishing the Rio Gallegos, and on the Argentinian side, it's a wee way above the Rio Grande, which is obviously the famous sea trout river. The Gallegos is very nice. There's a couple of trout camps or fishing camps on that river, and I got this lovely guide called Valentino. In fact, we've had regular touch recently. We kept in touch, and he took me to the river first morning, and I had to start wafting a double hander around, which I wasn't overly keen on, but sort of, you know, kept stum. We picked up a couple of sea trout, nice sea trout, and you know sea trout. They, I mean, when you hook them, they just go ballistic. They're so much fun. I mean, they can make you look like an absolute amateur. And anyway, I'd had a couple of sea trout, and this fly hatch started around lunchtime. Well, that was it. All bets were off. I reeled up, give the double hander to my guide. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm on my way back to the truck to get my single hander." And he sort of looked at me, sort of puzzled. And he said, "Well, what about?" I said, "You fish for the sea trout."
You went for the trout.
So yeah, I started fishing for trout. Anyway, it transpired. He was actually a guide from Montana, an Argentinian guide who'd gone to Montana for many years and guided, and then come back to Argentina. And he liked his trout. So the next morning he said, "Look, I know some spring creeks." I said, "Let's go." He said, "We shouldn't really go." I said, "How about this, Valentino? Why don't you sort of drive me up to the spring creeks? I'll just make a butty up in the morning. Just drop me somewhere. Tell me where you want to pick me up, or roughly be up on the dirt track at 5 in the evening or whatever. You take the double hander and go and fish my beat for sea trout." So that's the arrangement we had for the week. And I tell you what, Kerry, I had some fabulous brown trout fishing, just pootling up these spring creeks on my own in the middle of nowhere.
Bliss.
Free rising trout. Oh, man, it was just sensational. I'll never forget that.
And they probably don't get fished for.
That's part of it. I mean, you were certainly catching fish that looked absolutely pristine. Yeah, might have been kidding myself, but you kind of felt like nobody had ever caught some of these fish before.
Yeah. I would like to go to South America, Patagonia more than anything, probably. There's a Welsh-speaking community there, so that would be interesting for me.
I've been in that Welsh-speaking community.
Have you?
Because, yeah, well, consequently, we did some trips down to the Chilean side of Patagonia, as well as the Argentinian side. And these were trout fishing trips, not for sea trout.
Oh, right.
There's some fabulous fishing down there, man. I think if you went down, Kerry, chances are you wouldn't come back.
Well, that's what's happened to me here. You know, over the years, I've been coming over here and I'm thinking, well, why am I going back home? So that's why I'm in the West now.
You're over in Ireland, aren't you? That's
I
right.
I am now, yeah. Yeah, I'm in between places at the moment. Half the week I'm in Sligo, right next to Lough Arrow, and half the week then down on the Corrib. But it's the Corrib area, which is where my heart is, you know. So I'm there a couple of few times a week, really. Since we chatted last in the podcast, I noticed you had a big sea trout on your Facebook page. Is that from Iceland?
That's actually a brown trout from Þingvallavatn in Iceland.
Right. It's very silver fish, isn't it?
Yeah, well, lake fish are, Kerry, because obviously they need to be quite reflective. In fact, the landlocked in Þingvallavatn, I need to be careful how I say that, because any Icelanders listening will be up in arms and say I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Yeah,
I always have a joke, become quite friendly with a lot of Iceland guides. And I always joke when I'm over there that when they say the name of a river to you, they start off strong and fade it out. Like the Minnivaldur Lake, for example, which again, I guess I've pronounced wrong. But I'll say, "What's the name of that river we're fishing?" And they'll go, "Oh, yeah, the Minnivaldur Lake." You know, it's kind of like that.
They're all Vatn, because Vatn's water, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's correct. Yeah, absolutely. I always say you do it on purpose, because then we all don't know where you're talking about and we can't come fishing by ourselves, you know.
That lake in particular, you wouldn't fish it from a boat, would you, like they do over here? You fish off the shore, yeah?
I believe so, but I think there's some people have been float tubing it. It's a landlocked lake now. There was either an earthquake, I think it was an earthquake that created some kind of shift, and consequently it's ended up being landlocked. It contains five different species of char. The smallest one, which I believe is called Murta, this is what the big trout predate on. But also it gets incredible midge hatches. I've had some phenomenal fishing on there. Very fond memories of Thingvallavatn. A guy called Stiani Ben introduced me to it. Stiani's a great guy, lives in Reykjavik, was a guide for many years. I first met him guiding and we became very good friends, and he used to invite me over. We share that silly schoolboy sense of humor, so instantly get on extremely well. Yeah, he used to take me up lake. I fished it in various places around the lake. It is difficult. It's not easy fishing. It's vast. It's moody. You know, I've known us spend 3 days there, and it's blowing. I can remember being there one April. It was like Armageddon. It was blowing. It was sleeting. It was ice rain. For 2 days, we never saw anything. And then on the third day, the clouds parted, the wind rocked, and suddenly the fish just came on, and it was sensational. Yeah. Suddenly you forget all them couple of really tough, rough days.
Do they feed on the surface then, or are you fishing blind?
Yeah. No, you're catching on dries.
Oh.
I mean, you can lure fish. Obviously, I like my dry fly fishing. I mean, you fish to the conditions, Kerry, as you know. If you've got 2-foot waves on, you can't go mincing about with a size 16 black dry fly. You know, you've got to knuckle down and get an articulated streamer out. But we caught many fish, and that particular fish was on a dry fly.
Wow!
Believe it or not, and these things. I mean, that thing. I was using a 5-weight rod. Just when it ate the fly, this head came out, just ate the fly like a Labrador's head. You know, you wait for the head, because being such long fish, they take so long to turn down on the fly. You wait for the head to sink down and you see the back come out and the dorsal, and then, you know, you hope and pray and you tighten and you hope everything sort of locks up solid, and it did, and this thing head off. 5 times it had me down to the backing.
Wow.
5 times and 2 changes of underpants later, I landed it.
How big was it?
I mean, it was just a fraction short of 17 pounds.
My
16
God.
Pounds, 14 ounce. Yeah. Yeah, monstrous
on a,
thing.
On a 5-weight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no snags in that lake, and it's a smooth bottom. It's volcanic rock, nice black gold, we call it, because it was just fantastic for midge hatches, you know, great habitat for coronamids.
I think I'd finish fishing for the day after I've had that.
I was a gibbering wreck for some hours later, I can tell you that.
You can't come down or something like that, can you? Is that your biggest on a fly?
That is my biggest on a fly, yeah. What do you mean on a fly? What do you think? I bait fish as well, Kerry. I mean, that is an exceptional set of circumstances out there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all the ingredients. There's also one part of the lake where the ion beats, where there's hot thermal springs. So I would think, I've certainly fished them early spring. In fact, that fish didn't come from the ion beat, believe it or not. It came from nearly the opposite end of the lake. I think it's the natural park where you can get day tickets at a very reasonable price.
I wonder what they go to there then in size.
I've seen fish, sadly, not to my hand, but to others that are low 20s.
Wow.
And I've heard of 30s. They feed on the small char. There's one particular char, the murta that we were discussing earlier, that round about 5 to 7 inches long, that's all, in its adult life. And obviously that's a bite size for a big old brown trout.
So you're keeping busy with shows? Have you done quite a few this year, and any lined up?
So we had the guideline event earlier this year in Cumbria, up at Warwick Hall, in association with John Norris, which was a very good event. We've done a couple of tying shows for Semperfly as well. They're doing the road shows, which
That's
has been,
right, yeah.
again, yeah, very well attended. They're they're a great gig because they're taking, in effect, tires and materials to localities around the country, allowing people to sort of see the product firsthand. Yeah. And we just did this weekend. I was over at Semperfly. In fact, I believe you know Anne and Andy quite well. Yeah.
They're very proactive, aren't they? They don't sit in their laurels.
Yeah, no. And then this Sunday, and I felt I didn't miss anything because the rivers were up. Again, I was up at the John Norris event. They had an open weekend. James is very, very good at the moment as well. Again, just doing demonstrations for Guideline. And I think we've got certainly got a couple of road shows for Semperfly later in the year, and got an event in 2 or 3 weeks. One of the tactical fly courses are run for Cressbrook and Lytton anglers or fly fishers down on the Derbyshire Wye. So quite looking forward to that. It's nice. It's always nice to visit areas and show people how you sort of set your stall out. And that's not me, Kerry, saying that I know it all, because quite often at these events, and this happened at the John Norris show at the weekend, where people come to you and say, oh, you know, I find this and various like that. And as I say, every day is a school day where you can pick up little gems or snippets and use them to your own ends.
I was up that way last year. I fished with Chris Haig on the Chatsworth stretch of the Derwent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I believe he's a member there, Chris.
Have you fished that area?
I have fished it. I fished it several times. In fact, I used to fish it many years ago when the Chatsworth Angling Fair used to be held right on the banks. At the end of the day, for a bit of fun, they used to have a maggot versus fly, and it was the likes of Ian Heaps.
Oh, yeah.
And Bob Nod would be fishing. There's some names from the past, eh? Ian Heaps and Bob Nod would be fishing their poles and ledges with maggot, and there'd be three or four of us. Charles Jardine was one. God rest them. Malcolm Greenalge, who sadly passed away now, and Oliver Edwards. Howard Croston and myself got invited into the little sort of group, and we fished as well. And do you know what, Kerry? Quite surprisingly, often, obviously, we outnumbered them. There was five of us versus Bob Nudd and Ian Heaps. Often we would win, believe it or not, which I found quite incredible.
Yeah, you'd think it.
Because there was always this little sort of, it was friendly rivalry, of course, you know, because I got a lot of respect for Bob Nudd and Ian Heaps. And by the way, Ian Heaps is great fun on a night out. He's an absolute blast.
I actually went to West Wales. He bought the trout fishery, and he turned it into a coarse lake, actually. This was some years ago. Llawchadden, he was called. Nice guy. Great angler.
Yes. Super guy. Incredible angler. But we always had this little... There's always a sense of nervousness when people are asking you to perform and produce the goods. However, it was always a little bit worse because they'd be doing demonstrations through the day and lobbing in copious amounts of ground bait.
Yeah.
And we always had this feeling, oh, my God, all the trout, all the fish are going to be around the ground bait. But it was quite surprising that often, like I said, the fly would outfish the maggot.
If you're enjoying this podcast and want to listen to more, please consider becoming a Patreon, where you get weekly podcasts and access to over 200 episodes, plus behind-the-scenes photography, and other exclusive content. Visit patreon.com/castingwithkerryjones. Plus, if you fancy booking me for a day's guiding on the Corrib, give us a shout or visit thecorrib.com. Well, you're obviously a busy guy. You got plenty on. Do you still do your guiding?
I am doing some guiding, Kerry. I had a period some years ago when I was guiding quite heavily. It actually became a bit mundane, like a 9-to-5 job, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not sure. I know you've done a wee bit, Kerry. And I kind of sickened myself with it, if you like. So I came away from it for a while, and then getting one or two clients asking me to take them out. I'm at a nice place now where I've got good sort of client base. By that, I don't mean a big, extensive one. It's just people that I know what they're capable of and they know what they're getting from me. And I'm not asking for people who can land a fly on a two-pence piece. You know, I've got quite a few clients that have actually, I wouldn't say molded, but have sort of adopted my style of fishing. And each time we meet, it's quite nice because they say, I was out on such and such a river, and I remember the time we did this, and you did that, and you taught me this, and it worked a treat for us. So I keep it at arm's length. I could take on more, but I don't want to. I've got some nice clients at the moment, and we know each other. The relationship's great, and it's a fun day and often a productive day as well. So that's where I'm at with it, Kerry, at the moment. And that's the way I'd like to keep it.
There's a couple of points which I've found. I try to stick to 3 days. I don't want any more than 3 days a week because, as you said, you can spoil it for yourself. But there's two things which I find, two ends of the scale. There's somebody which is quite a novice, and to see them catch a fish, I get a buzz out of that then. It is a good feeling, isn't it? But the other side of the scale then, you see the fish in, it's like cream. It's everything that works, the conditions are good, there's a hatch, and you wish you were fishing yourself. There is two sides to it, isn't it?
If I'm being brutally honest, there is that side. I've once or twice had clients out, come round a corner and there's an eighth of a fish rising. And I've felt like saying, here's your money back, all bets are off.
Yeah.
But having said that, I've got some very nice clients and I take pleasure in finding and putting them on big fish. And usually they don't let me down. And they listen to me. Like I said, what I like, I actually like taking relatively new beginners out because, again, and women as well, they do everything you say to the letter.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of say, don't make a cast and just wait on this fish. And they're so studious with it. It's really good. You know, us blokes who think we know a lot and know best, I'm not going to listen. I'll just do my own thing, you know.
Yeah.
So when you've got these kind of people and, you know, it's an absolute pleasure. It's almost as if you're holding the rod. And the other thing is, mentioning that, Kerry, I often see things that I wouldn't see if I was fishing because I think your emotions are totally different and more wired when I've got a fly rod in my hand. Some of the things I pick up on in nature and insects and trout behaviour has come from observation when I'm guiding more so than when I'm actually fishing myself.
We touched on Semperfly, which you're associated with. You've also with Guideline, is that right? So what's the story with Guideline? How are you involved with them?
Yeah, well, Guideline, traditionally, Scandinavian company, and I say Scandinavian because it sort of was partly formed in Sweden and in Norway as well. Right. So they call themselves a Scandinavian company. It's traditionally a salmon product where they made, and they still do make, cracking double-handers and cater for the double-handed market. But they consequently have got into the trout fishing side of things, and very exciting company because they're making some really good product. They're thinking about the product. It's getting well tested, which is where I come in as well, not just testing, but helping with product development. And, you know, it's a family-run business, very much like Semperfly, and everybody in Guideline fishes, which is, you know, end of the general director all the way down to the people who work in the warehouse fish. Frederick, who is in effect my boss, he's so passionate, it's unreal, you know. And it's that passion that's there and the understanding. You know, I've been involved with companies where the hierarchy, for want of a better term, yes, figures matter at the end of the day and spreadsheets, but it's not the end of. They're just producing thought-provoking product for people who fish, you know. So it's very exciting, very exciting.
How long have you been with them?
Came on board last May. Yeah, I'm hoping that we're building a long-term relationship, hoping to be there for some time, because it's a good fit. Frederick will contact me where you're fishing, you know, when you get a moment, when you're not fishing. And he respects that and understands that. He knows what kind of animal I am. You know, there's a lot of people in the company. Jim Curry as well, who's the UK sales director, if you like. I'm sort of initially answerable to Jim. Again, another passionate angler and a good all-rounder. He salmon fishes as well as trout fishes, though I'd like to think I've got the edge on him fishing.
No, you've got two good brands there with Semperfly as well. I've done a couple of podcasts with Anne and Andy.
Yeah, I was over at Semperfly at the weekend with Andy and Anne. And again, Andy's such a driven individual and very, very creative and passionate as well. Yeah. We were doing some product development there. So that's another good fit. It's really good.
Well, it's good that everything's going well for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you still do your writing?
Well, as you know, Kerry, I did one or two pieces for you, and it was a shame what happened with the journal. Still involved with trout and salmon, but Mark Bowler from Fly Fishing and Fly Tying approached me. The nice thing about Mark is he's sort of given me a huge degree of freedom to write about what I want to write about. And look, we kind of know each other from that professional writing background, Kerry, of mainly, I'm guessing, trout fishermen. Is that correct?
That's right, for myself, yeah. I think we both started about the same time.
Yeah. So, look, I write from a perspective of not trying to be a know-it-all. It's just about my journey and the mistakes I make and new findings. As I said earlier in the podcast, every day is a school day, and I'm still finding out things that are new to me and about trout behavior, about insects. And it's kind of nice to share that. You know, the likes of you and I call it a privileged position, but we kind of set our lives up to be where we're at in terms
Absolutely.
Of the freedom we have to sort of indulge in our passion. Obviously, that comes at a cost as well, financially and otherwise. But you know, Mark has given me a degree of freedom, and it's nice to share things. You know, this spring, for example, has been quite a revelation with the super low water we've experienced. You know what, Kerry, I loved it, and we've had an absolutely sensational season, especially for big wild brown trout.
Really?
And what's done it is, despite the rivers dropping low, they've remained stable, and both the trout and fly life like that stability.
Yeah.
You know, it's why tailwaters are so productive, because they're stable. You know, for those readers who don't know, a tailwater is a label for a river that essentially flows out of a lake or a reservoir. And they're tempered by the lake or the reservoir, and therefore they're a lot more stable in flows and temperatures. And also it benefits invertebrates as well.
Because I know a lot of a lot of the waters in Wales, the rivers would come off the reservoirs. The water is released from the bottom of the lake, so you don't get that hot water.
Water at its densest is 4 degrees C, so you can get colder water sat above 4 degrees, and you can also get warmer water sat above 4 degrees. And it's why water freezes from the top, because if you think about it, where it comes into contact with the atmosphere on the surface, i.e. a lake, it'll always freeze from the top down. And it'll never freeze because you've always got 4 degrees at the bottom. Like I say, it's nice to write about your findings. Kerry, you'll know what this is like. Sometimes you put something in black and white, and 12 months down the line, you've found out something else that changes your opinion on that. And that can be difficult, because I hate putting things in black and white and then being called out on it. However, that's the nature of the beast here. You know, I've found out things this spring about trout behaviour that not that I didn't understand. I've just experienced or witnessed things, and I've thought, you know, geez, this is just amazing. You know, I never really thought that. One example, just quickly, is when the rivers were super low. Obviously, there's not a lot of flow. just the speed that individual trout would cruise about, knocking fly off the surface. I was guiding one day and I was perched up high on the bank looking through some trees, and my client was down, and we were trying to pin down a good fish. And a fish would rise. I said, "That's the fish, don't cast yet." And then, I kid you not, it would just zoom up river 20, 30 yards and rise again. I said, "There it is again."
Wow.
And my client would say, "No, that's a different fish." And I would say, "No, it's not. It's the same fish. I can see it. They're just moving about so quickly."
Right.
I clocked some fish, Kerry, cruising a beat which was 70, 80 yards long.
Wow.
On certain pools. They were canalised, of course, but it was just incredible to see that. And, you know, I'd never thought before an individual fish would be prepared to move that far. And the other thing, what I noticed as well, and we know trout, and brown trout in particular, can be extremely sort of territorial. I noticed that big fish, when there was a sort of surfeit of food, if you like, that big fish were very tolerant of each other. I'd often come across a pod of two or three big fish. You know, can you imagine that as someone who, and we all like catching big fish, but coming around the corner and finding three big fish all active at the same time.
Wow.
In one area, like a kiddie in a sweet shop, isn't it? You know.
Do you think they're searching for food? Is there a shortage of food, and they keep looking around, or because you'd expect them once they've got a nice lie, they'd think, right, let the food come to me.
So the pools were sort of pedestrian floors, if you like, Kerry, whereby the pools were, the floor really didn't exist.
Right.
So these fish were cruising, very much like lake fish, cruising about. There was ample food, but if a fish stayed on station, it might wait a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes before the next insect drifted over it, because there was virtually no floor. In fact, on days when the wind was blowing upstream, if you cast out, your fly line physically moved upstream with the direction of the wind, but absolutely no flaw. So they adopted this sort of nomadic feeding pattern, if you like, whereby they just went searching for food. I mean, valuable lessons I've learned this spring, and I've been fishing now, let me do the sums here, Kerry, I can't do it on one hand, so fingers and toes are out as well. I've been fishing for 46 years now, fly fishing, and these are things that I've never experienced. But then again, you can say some of the weather patterns we're experiencing these days are kind of new to us as well. You know, yeah. I've never known such a long dry period. And people were bleating on about, oh God, you know, no oxygen in the water. You've got to remember this was spring.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There was, water temperatures were still very, very comfortable, and consequently the amount of sort of dissolved oxygen within the water was still adequate. So there was no threat to the fish whatsoever.
Do you know what you were saying?
Obviously.
You've been fishing for 46 years. I first picked up my fly rod 48 years ago. So we both money have started the same as well.
That's amazing.
It's frightening, mind, when your birthdays come up and you're thinking, Jesus, I don't feel that old.
That's a freaking combined fishing age of over 100 years between us.
Frightening, isn't it?
Should keep that bit in.
I know, we should keep it in. Although I'll give away my Tinder age then. But anyway, well, I hope you're going to have some fish tonight. I'm sure you will, if you get out, if the wind drops.
Since we started talking, believe it or not, the wind's just dialed back a notch or two.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
We'll be able to experience some blue-winged olive action.
Is that what is to be expected now the next couple of weeks for you, the blue-winged olives?
Certainly in the evenings, Kerry, and obviously Cadiz as well. The nearest water to where I live is actually a tailwater. It flows out of Lake Windermere. Consequently, it gets a phenomenal hatch of Cadiz in summer.
Right.
It's a little bit high at the moment, and this is the downside with lakes, is once they're full, and it's over full at the moment, the rivers that they sort of that flow out of them take quite a bit longer to drop. They're not like a typical Spate River that comes up quickly and drops quickly, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I've just got to be a bit patient, as keen as I am to get on there. I fished it the other night just when the rain was forecast, and it was a lifting river, and hit some good blue-winged olive action. Because the river was coming up, there was some fish that frustratingly were sort of out of range, if you like. I just couldn't wade to them. I actually picked up a sea trout as well. Well, what you'd call a finnick, if you like, a pound and a half sea trout, which ate one of the BWO spinners.
I'd love to try and have another trip up here sometime. I'll have a day with you. And any time you're over an island now, you'll have to let me know. I'll take you out the lake.
I would love to do that, Kerry. It's something I've been interested in particular the Cairnish thing.
Oh,
is of great interest to me, because as I understand it from the people I've spoke to who do this, it's more like hunting, if you like, rather than just sort of blind fishing. So I'd be keen to experience that.
It's
that
definitely,
would be one of my goals.
Yeah, it's definitely one for you. I can imagine you would be well into it. The early mornings, that's the only thing. You'd have to be up at 4 o'clock on the boat then at 4:30.
Many, many moons ago, Kerry, when I worked in industry, to get a fix, I used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was a local hill town to me, which was where I lived then, a mile and a half away from home. I used to drive to that at 3 o'clock in the morning, fish that for a couple of hours before I pootled off to work. We used to get Cairnish in the morning, and it was sensational. Occasionally, Kerry, I didn't make it to work. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. But there we go. That's a different story.
Yeah, I think you'd bring a lot to the table, because river anglers can do just that. When they come onto the lake, they can show a whole different ball game and skills to catch lake fish, which lake fishermen didn't know about.
Yeah, I'd be really interested. Very, very.
Well, there we are then. Next year, we'll do it.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been really good chatting again, Paul. Have a good evening tonight, and I hope to catch up with you soon.
Yeah, Kerry, absolute pleasure speaking with you as ever. Hope the readers enjoy it. And yeah, hope our paths cross soon, but perhaps not, given you're the other side of the lake at the moment, if you like. And hopefully, let me know when you're back, Kerry. Maybe we can meet up. That'd be good.
I look forward to that. Cheers, Paul.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and want to listen to more, please consider becoming a Patreon, where you get weekly podcasts and access to over 200 episodes, behind-the-scenes photography to go with each episode, plus other exclusive content and prizes. To become a Patreon, visit patreon.com/castingwithkerryjones, or you can find the link on my website, castingwithkerryjones.com. That's all for now. Tight lines, and may they always be up in the wave.